Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. This is Monday, the 15th of September, 2025, and this is episode 1252. I'm joined today by Bo and Firas, and we're going to discuss the identity of Charlie Kirk's assassin, how the left radicalizes our youth, and the elite's lies about the United Kingdom rally. Right, so we have an announcement to make. We have a live Realpolitik episode today at 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And Firas, what are you going to be talking about?
Well, I'm going to be talking about the evils of civil war, but that we are slowly sliding towards one. And unless there is some kind of truth and reconciliation with the left beginning to admit some of its errors, it becomes very difficult to avoid one. And we should see Kirk as the first martyr in that conflict.
Right. So do tune in. It's premium. Consider signing up. It's just as little as £5 a month. And watch Firas's Realpolitik. Right. So, Bo, should we start with the first segment?
One thing I was going to say was we'll do the rally in London tomorrow.
Yep.
We will cover that, but tomorrow, because none of us were there.
Yeah.
So we thought we may as well wait until Carl's in, because he was actually there at least.
Yes. Carl will do it. And
Yeah. So we'll cover that tomorrow. All right. So last time we talked about Charlie Kirk was, I think, was it Thursday last week? And at that point, Wednesday, was it? Yeah. The killer was still at large at that point. And the news broke in Britain right at the end of the working day on Friday, I believe, that they'd caught him. And so over the weekend, it's sort of been all in the news, hasn't it? Sort of all weekend long, and still in the news cycle today as well, of course. So we thought we'd cover it. So the guy is called Tyler Robinson. No relation to Harry Robinson, he's at pains to point out. Tyler Robinson, and there he is. So let's just have a quick few seconds of this video.
We got him.
The words that everyone has been waiting to hear. We're
always a bit of a cliche, I think, now, after the Saddam thing.
Yep.
We got him, Dave. I don't know.
Following breaking news, this is the mugshot of the 22-year-old man who authorities say killed conservative influencer Charlie Kirk. Tyler Robinson is his name, and he was arrested overnight, roughly 3 hours south of where he allegedly fired that shot that killed Kirk in front of thousands of people as he was speaking at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah, as part of a college tour. I'll tell you how Robinson's family knew that they were living with the person now accused of a horrifying assassination. This is a break.
Okay. So, one of the first things is he's very young. He's 22. On that podcast on Wednesday with Dan and Carl, I did say that my immediate reaction when there was that middle-aged or even older gentleman that they first got at the scene within moments, I remember saying, it doesn't ring true. It's not impossible. It's not entirely unheard of for political assassins to be older, but it's actually really quite rare. And in this case, he's very, very young, 22. I mean, you don't really know what you're doing. You don't really have a proper grasp on things when you're 22. Oh, usually you don't. Well, you know, I didn't. Sometimes you get people, I mean, sometimes you get an extremely young physicist or a poet or something that's in their early 20s, but most of the time you still don't really know what you think about things properly when you're 22. You haven't really lived much of a life yet, have you, when you're 22? Sure. like I was saying in the office earlier, that Princip, the murder in Sarajevo in 1914, he was 19.
Right.
Right. It's actually much, 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 much easier to radicalise someone who's very young.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's nearly always the way it goes.
Yeah.
They're very prone to emotional manipulation. The younger one is, the more prone they are to.
And to moral certainty in a particular way.
Yeah. And more prone to violence. A lot of violent crime will be younger people.
Yes.
It will be young men, nearly always.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, even in the army, an infantryman, you know, they don't really want you when you're in your 40s to be a rifleman.
Not really.
They prefer it if you're 20.
Unless you're in Ukraine.
Okay, so what's been in some of the news over the last few days? I've seen a few different places say that he's not cooperating with the authorities. I did see one article saying he is. Most of them seem to say he's not cooperating. But he did at least, it seems, sort of allow himself to be turned in. So some of the details of that. It seems like his parents, his own father, saw the images that the FBI had released and realised, oh, that's my son. So now there's the dilemma, like, you know, of turning in your own son, because there is the death penalty in Utah. Yeah. And they have said already, the authorities have said they'll be pushing for a death penalty should he be convicted. And so...
I mean, really, the father's behavior and honor and civic duty is the only reason for clemency here, is the only possible reason for clemency. Not the man himself, not the shooter himself. It's incredible that you see this willingness on the part of a parent, and you can imagine how difficult it must be for his father. Mm. We should genuinely pray for his father. We should genuinely wish his father well, because he did something extremely brave, which wouldn't happen in a lot of societies, in most societies, I would argue. Mm. It shows what a thoroughly decent human being he is. And it makes it more heartbreaking for him that his son would do something like that, that his son would be brainwashed to this extent.
Mm. Yeah.
You do everything that you can as a father to make sure that your children turn out okay. And the thought that it wouldn't happen is something that really worries you and keeps you up at night. It's a scary thought. And that he would go so wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So there's a little bit of a debate in the office on Friday afternoon about that. Would you turn your own child in, knowing that they'll probably get the death penalty? I think it's easy for me to sit here and say this, but you know, I think it is the morally right thing to do. I mean, when we look at, say, the families of the grooming gangs that don't turn their we condemn them.
Yep.
Saying that's wrong and that's disgusting.
It's obviously the morally right thing to do. The question, the only comment is about the difficulty of it.
Yeah, it must have been very, very difficult.
Yeah.
So the details are a little bit sketchy still, and one or two different places seem to have a slightly different spin on exactly how that went down. But from what I can gather, from what I've read, it seems like it went something like his father confronted him, saying, look, it's you, right? I can see it's you. It's obviously you. And something along the lines of he either explicitly or implicitly confirmed that it was him. Right. Then he went to a family friend, or some accounts are saying it was like the local priest or pastor or holy man of some type in their community. I think they were
Mormons.
I think they're Mormons, yeah. We'll get onto sort of the conservative nature of the household in a moment. He went to some sort of other third party, and they informed the police or the FBI, and they went round and they got him, and there was no struggle.
Yes.
He didn't commit suicide or anything like that, so that seems like that's how it went down. So the next thing, one of the next things to say is about sort of the household. Apparently he was joking on Discord, making various jokes about it. I've got an article here, if you're only listening to this, that he'd said it was his doppelganger did it. So, yeah, people are saying that he was raised, or it seems that he was, it is the case, that he was raised in a conservative household, conservative with a small c, Mormon, so Christian, you know, Church of the Latter-day Saints, isn't it, their formal name? Not unsurprising, in Utah. And so the first thing that the mainstream media or the left seem to be sort of deliberately, it seems to me, deliberately confusing the issue is that that's it. That's all there is to the story, that he was a conservative who did this. And there you go. So it's not one of ours, the left. It's not one of ours. It's one of yours. It's your fault. It's a right-wing killer. It's a right-wing murderer.
I found that disgusting entirely, because it is the character of the far left to never take the responsibility about everything. Mm. And they mentioned all sorts of influences on him, but never mentioned the radicalization he has received by most probably universities and definitely online spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's a tweet from Billy Baldwin, incredibly insightful political analyst, Billy Baldwin, The razor sharp insight of Billy Baldwin. He's saying he's not black, he's not trans, he's not Muslim, not a migrant, not a Democrat. Brilliant, Billy. Thanks for that.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done. At the Telegraph, saying the Charlie Kirk suspect spoke the language of the far right. Oh, did he? Did he, though? So what it seems to be, if you just scratch the surface of this thing, is that, yeah, he was raised in a conservative Mormon household, but then he went to university. He got a full scholarship, it seems. It seems like he was actually very bright academically.
Yes.
Which just goes to show, you can be very bright academically and still a psychopath and completely wrong-headed. I mean, look at somebody like Lenin. There's lots of very, quote-unquote, bright, but entirely wrong-headed.
He wasn't stupid.
People. Right, yeah.
He wasn't stupid.
He wasn't stupid. But there you go. So, it seems like he went to university and got radicalized. And then, now, sometimes when people are raised in a certain way, whether it's conservative or not conservative, sometimes you sort of carry that on through your whole life, and it's so deeply ingrained in your character and personality that you just go with that throughout your whole life to the grave, and you pass that on to your children. Often, though, especially when you're in your teens or your early 20s, it can be the case, very, very often, isn't it, that you rebel against that. You do a 180. What a cliche is to go to university and suddenly you're the opposite of what mummy and daddy always wanted for you. So it seems like something like that went on. He went to university, I think, for only one semester, or certainly less than 1 year. And the reports are coming out that he was in a relationship with a man.
Yep.
So he was gay. Would have thought that mummy and daddy back home wouldn't have approved of that.
Not in the least.
And if they were conservative, he's gone sort of full lefty, full Antifa.
Yep. My understanding is that he was also living in the university, not just at home. And so he was basically immersed in this atmosphere that you often find, unfortunately, in the academy, which has been largely captured by the left. And then he ended up, you know, rebelling, becoming gay, and dating a guy who says that he's trans. Mm. And that mental illness is contagious. I mean, the whole trans thing, we have to confront the extent to which it's a full denial of reality. And as we start to push back against the trans agenda, finally, these guys have two choices: either radicalize further and become more extreme, or admit that they've been living a lie for X many years and have mutilated their bodies. And very often, violence is the easier option than acknowledging reality and repenting. So there is going to be more of this from the trans side as reality punches them in the face and says, no, you can't change sex, you can't change gender, you can't do any of this stuff, it isn't real, it's all in your head, get over yourself.
It was also the case that he had anti-fascist slogans on his bullets and the bullet cases. No, just let me very quickly say is that in the minds of the left, and especially the non-particularly articulate left, I'm thinking of Joe Biden, he was saying it's all the same thing. Islamophobia, transphobia, homophobia, it's all the same thing.
Yes.
Climate justice, climate injury, it's all the same thing. So it's really academia to a very large extent. It's completely brainwashing people, young people. And it's trying to make them, like, trying to create narcissists.
That's a very important point, because the ideology of intersectionality, tying together all of these supposedly oppressed groups, along with the eschatology of the climate crisis, alleged climate crisis, it means that if you compromise on one, you have to compromise on the others. And we saw that in the exchange between Jonathan Willoughby, who goes by the name of India now, and one of the Muslim MPs, where the Muslim MP said, well, you know, I don't really think you're a woman. And so Jonathan Willoughby says, well, if you say that about me, then I'm going to say that you're not really British. Well, he's Pakistani, obviously, he's not British. Mm-hmm. So there is this weird omerta between them, between these different groups, that if you admit to one truth and therefore break up the alliance, we are going to start shaming you as well.
Yeah.
And so they must stick together. And the result of them being so relentlessly married to lies is that they must be violent, because at some point, it's the only way to defend lies.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Just on the point of the finding writings or engravings on the casings in the bullets, yeah, apparently they said things like, hey, fascist, catch.
Yeah. Also the Bella Ciao song.
Bella Ciao, yeah. They're the Italian anti-fascist,
yeah.
Anti-fascist, sorry. If you read this, you are gay, Lamau.
Basically,
it's very 22-year-old, isn't it?
Yeah, he was... One guy explained it as this being some kind of shitpost, but in the form of a murder, whereby you end up with these people that can't take anything seriously but are married to insane lies. And like, this is for them, this is funny. For them, killing us is funny. That's an important point here.
And there is also the other bit, that there are some people who are psychopaths.
Yes.
And they can hide their psychopathy under a guise of legitimacy with the victimhood narratives that are communicated in academia, and Obama and Hillary turned mainstream for the last 10 years.
Yes,
so correct. So there's this thing, some are still saying that it might all be sort of a 4D chess red herring, and in fact it was still something else going on. I think it's pretty clear at this point, relatively clear at this point, that it is just straight up this guy with anti-fascist and like trans ideology going on through his head. Now, the thing of going to university, I mean, I had it myself, but in my form it was being like really highbrow about ancient history. But you go to university, you don't really have much of a personality yet. Yes. When you're 19 or 20, you've only ever lived at home. You go there, you're away from home, you live at university in halls or whatever, you're completely allowed to do whatever you want, express yourself in whatever way you want, and you fall into... You make the university and your course and your friends at university your whole life. You haven't really got actually much other choice. And so, as I say, in my case, it was like falling in with public school kids that did classics. In his case, it seems like he fell in with anti-fascist trans types.
We should call them communists. We shouldn't call them anti-fascists.
Okay, fine. Yeah, no, good point. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, hardline communists. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And so it seems that over a matter of weeks or a few short months, went from being just like a conservative Mormon kid to a highly radicalized communist.
This is a problem with some very intelligent people, that they think themselves so much smarter than everybody else around them.
You'd have to be convinced before you pulled a trigger.
You're describing,
absolutely convinced.
You're describing academia, especially, you know, to a T.
Yes, but then they discover one particular truth or whatever, and it just, they can't pause and stop because their mind races ahead of them and leads them to extremism. It is a problem with some very high verbal IQ people.
I know it was the case with me when I was very young.
Yeah.
When I was 17 or 18 or 19, I thought I knew everything. I thought I'd done enough reading. I knew enough about the world. I've got all the answers, sort of thing. I remember thinking that. And I remember not that many years later, in my mid-20s or late-20s, looking back at myself just a few years earlier, wow, I was so wrong. I was so wrong about that. Oh, my God, I'm glad I didn't, that none of that led me to do anything crazy.
Yes.
Well, it didn't, right? It led me to just, like, read Tacitus.
I was going to say Tacitus radicalized me. Tacitus.
Right, yeah, yeah. But if it leads you to get a rifle and shoot someone like Charlie Kirk, because he's an evil demon Nazi that needs to be dead now, terrible, terrible, terrible thing. But it looks like that's what happened. I mean, I did watch one very interesting video, a little bit of armchair psychology, but the video I watched was of a professional retired FBI sort of psychological profiler type.
Right.
And he was saying that what this sort of thing often is, probably will turn out to be the case with Tyler Robinson, is just sort of a massive sense of insecurity and inadequacy. That Charlie Kirk is everything he isn't. Charlie Kirk's like got all his ducks in a row, got everything squared away, knows who he is, knows who he is absolutely to the point where he can debate the whole world.
Yep.
And this guy is just a mess of nothing. He's all over the place. It's absolutely all over the place. One minute I'm a conservative Mormon, the next minute I'm a massively pro-trans communist. Like, he's all over the place. Right, so
I think what confirms that to some extent is the fact that his immediate reaction after murdering Kirk was to run to Daddy. He didn't run.
But also gloat on social media.
So seek affirmation from social media, but also run to Daddy. So you could see that this is obviously they took him into the universities and it made him insane. And I'm sure there are some personality traits within him that helped. Probably very high verbal capacity. Obviously, he had a 4.0 GPA, which is like 100%. Obviously, very brilliant. And they destroyed his life with their ideology.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm sure he was prone to it. I'm not taking away responsibility from him. Mm. But I am saying that the fact that the Academy is captured by these insane extremists is a real problem. And this is an opportunity for Donald Trump to purge the universities, to properly purge them.
No, I agree with both your points, that it melted his mind. It seems like he went to university and it whooped him real quick to maxed out to 11.
Yeah.
But also at the same point, not taking responsibility for it. There's another thing that the very interesting FBI profiler said is that probably it was a slippery slope. He didn't go from absolutely peaceful to prepared to shoot someone.
Yes.
There would have been an escalation, almost certainly. It's the way it nearly always goes.
Yes.
Until you do something as drastic as that. Okay, so one of the last things to just mention for this segment is some of the gaslighting and the sort of fairly disgusting celebrations and things that have gone on over the weekend or since the event. Not just people celebrating it, but people just also playing interference on behalf of the left and the shooter. I mean, here's an article from John Sopel, one of the most disgusting fifth columnists you will ever come across. He's writing here, Trump's reaction to Charlie Kirk's assassination shows all his worst traits. No, it doesn't. Shut up, John. Disgusting. But there's loads, not just the TikTokers sort of literally dancing around and gloating, smugly gloating, but people like, I mean, Ilhan Omar went on Mehdi Hassan, and they're both sort of just short of whooping it up. Yep. Classic Hassan Piker. Hassan Piker's been in the news, all that sort of thing. That hijabi woman off of Bake Off.
Yes.
Playing defense, playing interference. Alistair Campbell got in a bit of trouble just saying things that weren't true about Charlie Kirk, that he'd advocated for the stoning of gay people. Just wrong. All the usual suspects. The list is actually extremely long of those that are not only gloating, but sort of trying to play some sort of intellectual interference on behalf of the killer.
Yes.
And it's just very revealing, isn't it? It's another one of those things, like the flag thing, or like the killing of that poor Ukrainian girl. Those that just have a normal human response, and those that have like a sort of a murderous, devious response. It's just very revealing.
I mean, this is something I'm going to talk about in a couple of hours on Realpolitik. The dissociation from reality and the hatred of the normal.
Mm.
The extent to which they hate normal human impulses, like preferring your family over strangers, like preferring your country over foreign countries, like preferring your religion over alien faiths. The most basic elements of humanity are all treated with insane hostility by the left. No wonder they turn crazy.
Mm. Mm. It requires you to be a bit crazy to go along with it and buy it.
It makes you crazier the more you go along with it.
Right.
We all have a bit of crazy in us. We all have bad things in us. We're all afflicted somehow. But it makes you much worse to believe these people. Mm. It makes you a much worse human being. And you see this kind of interference. No, nothing should be done about the radicalization of the universities. The fact that 98% or 99% of all professors are far left. That shouldn't be addressed. Why? Like, why should it? Why isn't this a problem?
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that's my time up. But just to finish it off saying, you know, at least they got him. It's not really much of a mercy, is it? But there you go. It's sort of better than it being a mystery forever who did it. So there you go, Tyler Robinson.
Right. Dreadnought Logan says, might I suggest a medieval punishment for him? Paul Anderson says, it's a bit Mediterranean heavy today, and in Greek, the wonderful replacer. Well,
okay.
I don't know. Dwight Power says, after we've watched the authorities openly cover up the Epstein files, I'm taking anything they tell us about this shooting with a pinch of salt. I'm not convinced a college kid has done this alone. A drunk changeling.
Saying there was a network of trans individuals who were aware of this happening before the fact. And this is being investigated, and Trump is using this in the right way to go after some of these organizations. So, yes, there might be more than one person who knew about this in advance.
Right. A drunk changeling. They hated Charlie because he ambushed them on their long march through the institutions. Mm. Losing to Trump sets them back 4 years, but losing to Charlie sets them back a generation.
Mm. Good point.
Yeah.
Well put.
He was incredibly influential with a young generation.
He was going behind enemy lines, wasn't he, really?
Yes.
Neon Realist says, New York Post report FBI investigation expanded to if wider network of trans militias had knowledge or role in plot. Utah-based trans militia group Armed Queers Salt Lake City deleted their accounts.
Interesting.
OPHUK says, if you accidentally hit a trans person with your car, is it considered manslaughter?
Manslaughter.
Busted Brian, as someone raised Latter-day Saints who left the faith and know many others who have former LDS, particularly university goers, have a bad tendency to become some of the most extreme degenerates.
That's often the case, isn't it? There's an old cliche in Britain that Catholic schoolgirls, after they leave school, become perhaps slightly more promiscuous than they might otherwise have been. It's a classic thing, isn't it? Not just religion, in all sorts of things. You're very, very conservative, raised very, very conservative, so you become an arch lefty, or vice versa.
Yeah.
It's true.
Right, so Boba Bud says that, to be fair, he could see how they think he was a groiper since he had a femboy lover. I don't know a lot about these groups. To be honest.
Inside and joke between the groipers and the MAGAs. It's
Flavius Magnus, the father is an honorable and just man with a moral strength few could ever hold.
Yep.
And Adam James says, those who dance on Charlie's graves are lost. Those who equivocate or go with, yeah, it's bad, he died, but are a half step from being lost. Question is if they will take that step. And Potato Radio says, University of Utah was where Steven Crowder's show stopped an attempt on Ben Shapiro 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that one. Yeah. It's interesting.
Right. So I think it's about time we have a... I think it's about time we have an uncomfortable conversation and talk about the extremist tendencies within quotation marks progressivism. If we really look into it, it's not progress, it's barbarity. That's anti-civilization stuff. They're not progress at all. But within this ideology, there are extremist tendencies. They're very highly correlated with the victimhood narratives that academia has created for the last 6-7 decades in the Western world. Lots of these people who created these narratives came from Europe. Critical race theory, critical theory before that, postmodernist theories, all of these came from Europe. And they were a particularly bad export from Europe into the States. And they have created several victimhood narratives which function in a way right now that leads to stochastic terrorism. Most people think that violence is justified when someone is in self-defense. So what these narratives are doing, they're radicalizing our youth, they're radicalizing Zoomers, but also everyone else, but mostly Zoomers within academia and online, by constantly creating a perception of reality that is entirely skewed and leads them to think that they are in conditions where they have to defend themselves. They believe that because these narratives are true, they are in conditions where they have to defend themselves, and therefore they think that they are justified in using violence. And I want to say that this is something unbelievably pernicious. People who were in academia could see it. I was in academia for more than a decade. I could see it. The level of evil you hear in academia is unprecedented. And I was very much into studying authoritarianism and totalitarianism, and I've been blocked by Anne Applebaum for telling her that you can't say you care about totalitarianism and authoritarianism and not focus on wokeness. Because she was playing a lot the Trumpist fascist card.
Yes.
Right? This absolutely vile rhetoric.
Anne Applebaum.
Applebaum is evil.
That's actually quite a good... badge of honor to be blocked by her.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we need to have a conversation about this, and people within academia who are sensible need to start speaking up, because unless they speak up, they will find themselves pandering to narcissists. They already find themselves doing that very thing, but they need to be, all of them need to become brave and start looking at what it is that they are pandering to. And why are they doing this? Not necessarily because they're bad people. Far be it from me to suggest that all of them are bad people. There are all sorts of reasons doing this. But these narratives were popularized and turned mainstream by Obama and Hillary Clinton in the last decade. It's one thing to say that there is a extremist narratives or narrative or series of narratives within academia, and at some point has created the power keg that will blow up. Mm-hmm. When you say this, most people don't listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
But now that this has real life consequences that more and more people wake up to, it's time to have that conversation again. Because we have said before that progressivism has extremist tendencies. Mm-hmm. I want to show you several ways in which this happens, and ways in which the Democrats, mainstream Democrats, but not just them, are using that narrative in order to create a false perception of reality to millions of people, according to which violence is justified. And when you do that to millions of people, when you're spreading narrative after narrative of victimhood, some of these people will actually do something. That's why it's stochastic terrorism. And that's why it's something that is deliberate, and it must be resisted by people across the political spectrum, because there have to be some decent Democrats or some decent supporters of the Democrat Party, presumably, who will not want to live in a society or be members of a party that is pandering to extremist, narcissist, psychopaths. So just one thing to say really quickly, this narrative according to which words are violence, but also silence is violence, is essentially a narrative where you can't win.
It's completely totalitarian, right?
Exactly. Unless you agree with the party, your existence is a threat. Mm. It's a threat. It's conducive to all sorts of imagined genocides that they are talking about. Therefore, they think they are justified in using violence against them. And also they completely deflect because they use narrative controls within propaganda to use this and project it on the other side. That's why they constantly have people, for instance, in fashion billboards where they say, my existence is an act of defiance.
Right.
Meanwhile, when they're actually declaring the existence of dissenters as an enemy they want to see eliminated.
Because they call them Nazis, because they call them fascists, because they call them far right.
Nancy Pelosi here says Democrats can't take responsibility for their rhetoric against conservatives because their intention for violence is not for violence to ensue.
It's the kind of thing I think was very good at the very top of this segment where you said progressivism isn't progress. It's more or less barbarity. Yeah, absolutely. It's the classic thing. There's a reason why George Orwell's 1984 is so sort of famous and prophetic. The idea in it of double think, double speak.
Yes.
That war is love and all that sort of thing. The Ministry of Truth, where it's all about propaganda and life.
War is
the Ministry of Love, which
freedom,
is about
slavery
and death. All those things. Absolutely. Yeah. The progress is actually pretty much the opposite. The idea that diversity is a strength. No, of course it's not. It's a weakness. Of course. And just the examples of that just go on and on and on. That they would co-opt the word progress.
Exactly.
Sorry, go on.
No, please.
I just had another few examples, but I think most people get the idea.
This is precisely why I'm very much against, from day one, I'm very much against using the language of the establishment, because first of all, I don't want to be carried into the whole pronoun thing, but also progress is the exact opposite of what the far left wants it to be. This is barbarity. That's not progress.
One of the things in the Cold War, very often sort of pro-communist Soviet, actually full Soviet organizations in the West, would quite often use the word peace, some sort of peace movement. Mm. Join the peace movement.
Yes.
Again, classic sort of double speak, double think.
Mao was saying a thing on the Red Book that our violence is anti-violence. against imperialists.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that the events of these last days, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, has created a situation where more and more people wake up from this alarmist and extremist narrative. And more people wake up from this, and they can't do narrative control the way they used to, because their side started cheering and they can't take this back.
Yeah.
They tried to take this back when they started gaslighting everyone by focusing on the quantity of different messages, when they said, no, it's a right-wing killer.
One parallel I've just thought of, maybe someone else has said it, I'm sure someone else has said it, but it's just popped into my mind. After 9/11, on the day of 9/11, there were people chanting and whooping up in the streets in certain Middle Eastern countries.
Yes.
And that is very revealing. A lot of people saw that and was like, wait, what, really? Wait, they're cheering for this.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it. I didn't know that. I didn't know people felt like that in Egypt or Saudi Arabia or wherever. Or Iran. I didn't realize they hated us that much. I think this Charlie Kirk thing, where various people were literally whooping and cheering and having a good time with it, I think a lot of people, normies, I suppose, have woken up to be like, oh no, they really do hate us with sort of murderous intent.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know that before.
Here we have someone reading and practicing probably the Maoist playbook that we just mentioned. Says Trump threw gasoline on the fire, made growing political violence, expert says. Right, so yeah, it's Trump's fault, according to him. David Pakman says MAGA is already declaring open season on the left after Charlie Kirk's disgusting assassination. This is the opposite of what we need. Are you going to take responsibility for creating and sustaining an alarmist culture? Not holding my breath. Right, so let's focus a bit on the philosophy behind it, and then focus also on some other aspects of it. So Carl and Thomas Dowlin did a premium piece here on Marcuse, the repressive tolerance. This was in 2021. Because Marcuse is behind a lot of these movements. He also had this piece on repressive tolerance. Let me, please, can I have control of the mouse, please? Right. James Lindsay, who has worked also a lot on this, he says essentially that in repressive tolerance, Marcuse insists violence from the left and violence from the right are not the same. Violence from the left is a moral necessity and must be tolerated. Nothing from the right should be tolerated. That's essentially the message. If you want to read also,
distinction.
If you want to check also the video that Carl and Thomas did, subscribe on Loads of Cedars and watch it. I think that's also, that may be, yeah, check it out. Right. And I want to say that this is a part of the philosophical aspect of this, but there's also another part that came from attacking traditional Western civilization, especially from the 50s and the 60s. There were lots of people who literally blamed reason for World War II and reason for oppression and all sorts of oppression and discrimination and everything. And they popularized the narrative according to which the Logos, which is the central pillar of Western civilization, in almost every strong pillar of it, the Logos is the pillar of Western civilization, they attacked it as a form of oppression itself. When you do this, no wonder you're going to get out with screeching people who are glorifying their whims and have zero emotional regulation, and they think that just because they feel oppressed, they are oppressed, and they are justified in killing everyone. The pillar of Western civilization is the idea that emotions should be held in check by reason and by the higher aspect of our nature. Because unless we do so, we are going to be completely governed by the lesser aspects of our nature. That's, in a nutshell, Plato's Republic. The tyrant is governed by their lower self. Right, and we have here Obama, who basically says, I want you to stay angry. I want you to stay frustrated. He wants this narrative to continue. We have Hillary Clinton, who said half the US, half the supporters of Trump are a basket of deplorables. And she compared them with Nazis and fascists. This ridiculous alarmist narrative, according to which unless you support open borders, you're a supporter of Hitler, as if the people who fought and won Hitler were in favor of open borders. They weren't. Right. We have here all these things from Joe Biden, who was, again, fanning the flames of this ridiculously alarming narratives, saying Donald Trump is the greatest threat to a democracy. He's a genuine threat to this nation. He's a threat to a freedom, a threat to a democracy, a threat to everything America stands for. Threat to democracy poses many threats to a country, but the greatest threats to democracy, if we lose that, we lose everything. Just here we have threads of Democrats essentially calling for violence and normalizing violence against Trump. I'm not going to show all of it because I'm mindful of time. Jasmine Crockett. The violence is all from MAGA, not the left. It's just, you can't get more disgustingly mistaken.
And deliberately.
Yeah. Yeah. Not interested in truth or reality, not remotely.
It's all narrative control.
Just not interested.
All narrative control. Here we have also media. We have influencers from the left essentially calling for violence. If that's not an incitement to violence, I don't know what is. But they're keeping that alive.
What did Piker actually say and do?
Well, he said that you need
to, they, little clips,
they need to be gutting them.
Right, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Right. Right, now let's go to the UK just for a moment to show how this alarmist narrative plays into UK politics. Owen Jones. The far right wants to shut down democracy, crush the left, who say they see as traitors, and drive out minorities, who they see as an existential threat to the notion of Western civilization. Everything they do is a means to those ends.
The idea that replacing people with a people of different culture is not a threat to the existing civilization is stupid.
It's a destruction of the demos. And you can't have a democracy without a demos.
Exactly.
And by constantly offending your demos and calling them extremist lunatics.
Exactly. But the idea that if this country becomes 50% Muslim, it'll still have the same governing system is so laughable, is so dishonest, is so pathetic. Even the Palestinians, when you talk to the honest ones, they'll tell you, we don't want a Palestinian state. We want a fundamental change in the whole regime that stops us from becoming another Jordan or Egypt, because they know that this group produces this polity. So the idea that, they're just vulnerable minorities and they're a threat. Guys, let's just be honest about this. This
there
is not how it
genuine
works.
There are threats, and we need to focus on empirical data. I think one of the best things about AOC has been said by Thomas Sowell. Mm. He said her speech is incredibly manipulative. She mentions no facts. It's all emotion.
It's all emotion.
Here we have. Sorry.
Well, Farris says, you know, let's just be honest. Let's have an honest conversation. Well, that's the exact thing that someone like Owen Jones isn't prepared to do.
Not at all.
He talks about other people lying all the time. That X, Y, Z concept or narrative was always a lie. He says that a lot. He's the one peddling in misinformation.
Completely.
He was the one who's saying right up to the last minute that there's no such thing as grooming gangs.
You think he's going to be,
for example,
sort of favorite homosexual in the caliphate? that's what he thinks he might be in a best case scenario. I don't know if he even understands the implications of the things that he's advocating.
Well, he can only peddle lies. And if someone, like when there was that Bataclan thing, oh no, sorry, not Bataclan, I think there was some sort of gay nightclub shooting, maybe was it Orlando? He'll just get up and leave an interview. Because
yes.
You've got nothing. She's got nothing.
Yes.
He's the type of person who can't have a genuine debate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, bad faith every time, without fail, as hard and as deep as possible.
Zoe Garner here. She,
yeah, who is she?
Just,
I've only become
just
aware of
look,
her.
Look at this. Look at the narrative.
There's a darkness coming. It's already swallowed America. And now it's coming for us, too. In 2019, we protested against Donald Trump, and we thought, if we shout loud enough, maybe he'll go away. Now he's back. On September 17th, Donald Trump...
So she's essentially saying, we thought that if we played the Democratic card, we would win, but we lost. What else do you want?
Well, if we don't win, it's fascism.
Here, let's remember this man who is essentially playing into this alarmist narrative according to which everyone who disagrees with the left is a fascist. And let us see his true colors and how they were revealed. Let's remember this.
They hurt. We've got children and women using those trains, destroying some relatives. They are disgusting, nasty fascists. And we need to cut all their throats and get rid of them all.
And then they had the Free Palestine chant. So he's essentially playing into this narrative, according to which everyone who disagrees with the left is Mussolini at best, and they deserve the treatment according to of throat slashing, according to this reprehensible rhetoric. And man, who was released? He didn't face any consequences for them. Yes, he didn't remain a Labour councillor, but I don't think that's, it's just, this is precisely the far radical left rhetoric that is creating the polarization. It's inventing enemies. Yeah. And politicians, and you could say that he is a minor figure, but politicians like Obama and Hillary Clinton and politicians who had who occupy the top echelons of power are normalizing this rhetoric. They are pandering to people with this rhetoric. And unless they change course, they will find themselves completely pandering to narcissistic psychopaths.
And I think it's worth pointing out just real quick that it is the left doing it first and the right only reacting to it.
Yes.
I think I said it on the other day. There's a reason why all throughout history, the right has been known as reactionary. The forces of reaction. Yeah, we're reacting to your insanity. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You did it first. You forced our hand. You painted us into a corner here. It's not like people like Roger Scruton or Jacob Rees-Mogg were the first to call for throats being cut, right? It's not that. That's not how it went.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Exactly. They're continuously dishonest about it. They will murder you and say that it's your fault for getting murdered.
Yeah.
If you hadn't been controversial, you wouldn't have deserved to be murdered.
This is the narcissist who says, look what you made me do. And what we said before about the logos is incredibly important. It's not just a theoretical, thing to say to sound smart. It's very, very, very specific. The Democrats have pandered to the very emotional side of politics. And they have found themselves in a situation where you could arguably say that the best of humanity, compassion, is being twisted against humanity.
Yes.
Because it's normal to try to understand people. It's normal to try to show respect to people. It's, I'd say, a good thing to show goodwill to people in society who claim to be oppressed and just listen to them. Listen to them.
Yes.
But what they have done is that because they have jettisoned the idea of reason as that which regulates emotions, they have locked themselves into a situation where they cannot impose limits according on the narcissists who are going to essentially push for claiming that you can't really respect me unless you agree with me and do as I say. You can't really give voice to the unheard unless you do exactly as they say. You can't really show compassion to me unless you agree with my self-conception and do as I say. That's the kind of Democrat Party that is the legacy of Obama. And the good thing, I want to end up on a good note, because we should focus on the good note as well. There were people who instantly, from the Democrat Party, instantly went out and said that that's not in my name. I'm leaving. I'm considering stop supporting. And they didn't do it afterwards when there was backlash. They did it instantly. So we have here, she's saying that basically that she's had enough. We have also other people. Check out our links. They're speaking against this. Dean Withers, I want to basically say this. He was sensible. He was actually compassionate, which suggests to me that, you know, he's very young. He's one of the white dudes for Harris. He's very young. He was brought into this because he wants to be compassionate and he wants to show goodwill to people. But, and I want my message to Dean Withers is just, well done for this. But also, you need to start thinking of the distinction between, you know, imposing limits on narcissists and letting them have their way with you. All decent people should learn to do this. Here, Joseph also had a 10-minute video and says, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm done. That's not in my name. Definitely check this video out because there are also good people on the other side, because, and these are times where people may be prone to demonize everyone on the other side. It's important, as Firas said before, to think of reconciliation, and the Democrats need to hold their party in check.
Yes.
They need to do this. Bernie spoke also. I want to say that Bernie is very much respected in the Democrat Party, and in many ways, AOC is seen as his successor, but I do think AOC is precisely this hyper-emotional, is using this hyper-emotional rhetoric. I know, somehow they have to check their party.
I wrote an article, it's among the first articles I wrote for Lotus Eats, actually, so probably 4+ years ago, likening AOC to a very inarticulate version of Marat in the French,
yeah,
in the French Revolution.
Jean-Paul Marat.
Yeah.
The sewer lurker.
A rabble rouser, somebody playing with matches. But at least the real Marat was extremely eloquent,
yeah,
and well read. She's not even that. Yeah, someone that's here to burn it all down.
Yes,
someone that's here to, if you're not completely in line with them, to get you killed. Yeah, a monstrous figure, really.
Yeah. Jesus is King makes a donation of £10. Thank you very much. Helen Hans Forehead for £5. Seen several people attribute Nick Fuentes' quotes to Charlie Kirk. I'm starting to think the leftoids celebrating have genuinely confused him for Nick. Danesca for £5 also. No, €5. Yeah. Hello from a French overseas department called Guadeloupe in the Caribbean. Get your country back, gentlemen. Crackdog for $3 says the Groyper narrative is painfully stupid.
True.
Right. And here we have TomRat247 for $1. Thank you. The Kirkening has revealed that the modern US left most resemble the Baader-Meinhof group sympathizers in West Germany. Troubling. Steel Fang says...
Sorry. Baader-Meinhof was a far-left German terrorist group that assassinated a bunch of corporate types and was closely aligned with the Palestinians.
Yeah, like the Weather Underground.
It's the German version of that.
Yeah. There's lots of... Over the years, there's been lots of them.
Leftist violence in the 60s is one of the areas of history that is very poorly covered. Yeah.
Steel Fang says... Excuse me?
Okay.
Steel Fang for $10 says there's a darkness coming. It's called Islam. OPHUK for $2 says, in AOC's defense, she's got a great rack. Right. Okay. Let's go to the third segment.
So let's talk about some of the sort of disinformation from the media on the protest that we saw in London on Saturday. This isn't a full coverage of the event. There's going to be more coming in tomorrow. But I just want to talk a little bit about the dishonesty. On the BBC, I had to look through their pages because none of their main pages had anything about it. They had zero analysis of it, and they only had one story about fighting with the police, in which any kind of mention of what were the drivers of the protest were left to the very far bottom of the piece, completely buried the lead, tried to cover it in the worst way possible. And the focus was on, oh, there was a bit of violence, and really that's just Tommy Robbins' fault, and it's the protesters' fault. No respect as to what these people wanted, no respect as to why there was a protest, no self-reflection whatsoever on why one of the biggest demonstrations in London's history happened, and why so many people from mostly a working-class background were joined by people from across the world to speak about the problems of Britain. Zero self-reflection. And the whole point of it is that we don't want to think about it. We just want to call them far right. And
Auntie is a spiteful mutant. I don't know if either of you know this.
Right.
Not growing up in Britain, but the BBC used to be called itself Auntie.
Yes.
It doesn't really do that anymore, but it used to.
No.
Like they'd do a show that showed loads of sports bloopers.
Right.
And it'll be Auntie's sporting bloomers and stuff like that.
Right.
As though it's a member of your family, a loving member of your family.
Yes, yes, yes.
But no, again, classic leftist stuff. It's the absolute opposite that's going on. It's now a tool, nakedly a tool for subversion.
Well, if you want to do something extremely positively subversive, watch old BBC footage from the 60s and 70s, where they present a pristine, ordered, thoughtful society that actually works, and contrast it with the mess that you have today. Some of their older documentaries are absolutely stunning.
Sure.
But today, it's just hostility. And we got the expected reactions from the usual suspects. Zahra Sultana, obviously she's using the language of the far left, so she's describing everybody she doesn't like as fascist and far right.
Sure.
And I don't blame her for that. She is using the subversive language of the communists in order to push her own community's interests. This is precisely what's happening. And if you think there's an ounce of principle there, please, come on. First understand that Marxism is a Christian heresy, then you understand why the Muslims use it in this way. They use it to undermine Christendom. That's the whole purpose behind it. You see the BBC using a black presenter, of course, to call the protest far right and to call Tommy Robinson far right. That's sort of something that they keep on repeating. And the pairing of the presenter with the message is not accidental. This is deliberate. They're trying to show that the poor minorities are victims as they, we, the minorities, work our way to becoming a majority. This is not something that you should wish for.
Speaking of this, I have a question for you, for us,
yep.
which is entirely rhetorical. There were around 25 arrests from a political demonstration of people who went to the United Kingdom rally. There were around 500 arrests, not on a political demonstration, but on a celebration, the Notting Hill Carnival.
Yep.
What does that mean? Does that mean that the celebration of some people
brings us
is
to,
sometimes more dangerous than the peaceful protest of some other people?
I will answer you honestly. It brings us to a lot of Charlie Kirk's points about the problem of black crime. And this is a problem that should be spoken about using data and compassion, not be shied away from and be presented as the black community being victims. You mentioned
earlier,
daily
about this last week. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier the way that they have these imagined genocides. If you ask the average Democrat how many unarmed black men get shot by the police every year, they will say something in the thousands, when the actual number is something between 10 and 20. And a lot of them being actually, you know, driving a vehicle at the police, or they had a knife next to them or a gun next to them, and then they were shot while not holding it. Yeah. So it's just complete dishonesty. The aging communist Paul Mason, violent attacks on the police and anti-racists. It's a sort of representation of good versus evil. The far right rally, football types, many already on their third can of lager. Okay, this kind of mockery of the working class from a communist is very Soviet, very properly Soviet. They said that they were all for the working class, and they absolutely stomped their heads as quickly and as severely as they could.
The kulaks are a part of the problem. The peasants are absolutely the problem.
Exactly, exactly.
For socialists.
The minute they came within the radar of power, they said, we need a vanguard party.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And look at what he calls himself, radical social democrat. Just call yourself a communist, Paul.
Yeah.
Just have the decency of respecting our intellect.
And one point to make, it's interesting that we all know this already, I'm restating the obvious, but they go after Tommy so hard when, in fact, like, he's a racist, he's a white supremacist or nothing, and all that sort of thing. No, he's a multiculturalist.
He's fully a multiculturalist.
He had like
I'm to the right of Tommy Robinson, guys. Yeah.
Didn't he have like a black choir singing there at one point?
He brought on
some Maoris.
He had Maoris.
So it's like black choirs. So it's a multiculturalist.
Multiculti. Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Okay.
But here's the demonization. This is the radicalized mass base of Reform and the Tories. Wearing our country's flag as a badge of white identity. Guys, if you didn't know that Britain is white and India is brown, I don't know what to do for you. Like, I don't know how to help you. It's not Bo's fault that he's pale-skinned. I don't hold it against him, and it's fucked up that you do.
We must learn the lessons of the 1930s.
And then you have that aging degenerate Peter Thatchell. Tens of thousands of supporters cheered speeches urging a ban of public expression of non-Christian religions, based, demanded the remigration of legal migrants, based, pushed COVID conspiracy theories, were you asleep during COVID, and claimed that Britain is being invaded. Where's the lie?
Yeah.
Like, if the illegal migrants outnumber the armed forces and they're all young men, what's, like, I mean...
Peter, it is being invaded. It has been invaded, Peter.
And you see, I just wanted to mention something from the stupid numbers machine called Grok. Tommy Robinson hasn't explicitly called for authoritarian ultranationalism in those words, but critics, example, The Guardian and the ADL, point to his EDL founding anti-Islam rally rhetoric promoting strict nationalism, he's a multicultural, as fitting the description.
You know what? There's another bit. If you constantly say they're about to destroy society, you're essentially And you're just telling to your voters, hey guys, you're so great, keep voting for me because you're preventing the Armageddon.
Yes, pretty much. And the more you develop a sense that the next time we lose an election, it's going to be a genocide, the more you justify violence. And the more you say the people who vote for reform and the Tory party are fascist far right.
Yeah, they're not as left as Mao.
It's insane. I wanted to play this 1 minute clip from Trevor Phillips, of all people. If you don't remember, he was Tony Blair's guy to look at inequality in Britain.
Yeah.
So his job was to go and woke
the OG
up.
DEI.
Yeah, the original DEI enforcer. He's the DEI czar of Tony Blair. That's who he is.
Because what conclusions did that commission or whatever it was come to? That we were all racist.
Everybody was racist, obviously.
Systemically
obviously.
Racist.
Yeah. Everything, all the time. And here's what he says.
The most alarming aspect of the event was just how normal the vast majority of the marchers were. I spent an hour or two amongst them, and my own impression was that they were mostly the sort of people you'd meet in a country pub or in half-time queue for the loo at football or at a concert. There was a sprinkling of black and brown faces, and the event was brought to a close by a gospel group singing Jerusalem. All that must worry the traditional mass parties, Labour and Conservatives, now polling at less than 40% between them. They're draining support to parties like Reform and the Greens. And yet, a man recently out of jail, condemned as an extremist thug by most mainstream media outlets, can rally a demo the size of the entire population of Cambridge or Blackpool. A feat you couldn't imagine either Sir Keir Starmer or Kemi Badenoch pulling off anytime soon. Perhaps the people are sending us all a message. Let's see if anyone at Westminster's listening.
And then, because he said something sensible, Sky News took this clip down. The sort of censorship wall around normal people and their grievances that goes through every single media establishment is absolutely crazy. This is a guy saying that the protesters maybe have some legitimate grievances. You might not like all of them. I'm sure there were a couple of thugs there, but on the whole, they're normal people. And the response is, no, he never said it. We're going to memory hole it instantly. Yeah. Just as the BBC is trying to memory hole the protest itself.
You can imagine, Trevor Phillips has just revealed himself as a Nazi.
Exactly.
He was a Nazi all along. Trevor Phillips. Oh, no. Trevor Phillips was one of them all along.
The OG DEI czar of Tony frickin' Blair. And you can't listen to him saying these are normal people? And none of you can pull off a rally like this? If Kemi Badenoch called for a rally, who'd go there? I think, other than the front bench of the Tory MPs, if they didn't have anything better to do, nobody else would show up. So these people are deliberately out of touch. And exactly the point that you made, it's not just that there was a much smaller number of arrests, Bo, it's that there were no weapons and no sexual offenses. Nobody got raped, nobody got stabbed. You can't say that about Notting Hill. Look at how they cover Notting Hill. Look at how they cover United the Kingdom.
How many twerking offences up against a policeman were?
All twerking is an offence. And so Ed Davey and a bunch of other commentators began to lose their minds because Elon Musk said some very nasty and dangerous things, including the violence is coming to you. Now let's look at what Elon said with a little bit of context, please. You can help me get the right seconds.
And no people. And in fact, this is a government against the people and not for the people. This is why everyone is gathered here today, is something's got to be done. This is unacceptable. The government needs to be responsible to the people of Britain. It needs to protect Britain. Needs to protect the weak, those who cannot protect themselves, especially the children. And when I read about some of the horrific stories and how the government did nothing and tried to hide it. They tried to hide this, these horrific crimes. And then you see how much violence there's on the left with our friend Charlie Kirk getting murdered in cold blood this week, and people on the left celebrating it openly. The left is the party of murder and celebrating murder. I mean, let that sink in for a minute.
So, yeah, can we go to the... That's one apparently terrible, terrible thing he said. The British government should be responsive to the British people. The left is celebrating murder. If you keep on celebrating murder, that by definition makes you the party of murder. I mean, these were people who were laughing when this random comedian had a skit with a beheaded, bloody Donald Trump.
Yeah.
They were celebrating all of that.
Griffin.
Yeah, whatever her name is. They were constantly calling everybody who disagrees with them one brand of far left or the other. Yeah, please reload it and then put it at the 5-10. So they were constantly doing all of this. But it's really bad that Elon Musk sort of pointed out that this is exactly what they were doing. And then the other thing that got people very angry is this. Could you play it, please?
British common sense, which is to look carefully around you and say, if this continues, what world will you be living in? This is a message to the reasonable center, the people who ordinarily wouldn't get involved in politics. Who just want to live their lives. They don't want they're quiet. They just go about their business. My message is to them, if this continues, that violence is going to come to you. You will have no choice. You're in a fundamental situation here whether you choose violence or not, violence is coming to you. You either fight back or you die.
This pissed off a lot of people because the language used was stark, but as a sort of someone who's covered civil wars for pretty much all of my career, that's exactly right. If you allow the extremism to get out of control, if you don't try to contain it, you can't sit in the center and say, I'm neutral, because the people chucking bombs at each other around you won't care about you. So what Musk is saying is extremely sensible here, and it's absolutely correct.
It happens many times. You will have someone like Musk or other people putting forward a descriptive statement and saying, yes, if things escalate,
yes,
and nothing reverses this polarization and escalation, things will get messy.
Yes.
That's a descriptive statement, and it's uncontroversial. It's true.
Yep.
It's even axiomatic. It's not a particularly controversial thing to say.
No.
But then the response of the other side is going to be, no,
you're
that's not descriptive. That's an exhortation to violence.
Exactly.
Because they want to fan the flames of the alarmist narratives of victimhood in order to make their people think they're justified in committing violence.
Exactly. Confirming the multiculturalism theme, there were a lot of speeches that were anti-Islam, and I would argue rightly so, and I'll explain why. But Tommy Robinson puts out a tweet saying that this Muslim guy went to the protest and actually liked it and thought that if there were 3 million people there, then maybe 500,000 he wouldn't have liked, but the rest he got along with perfectly. So the idea that this was, again, some kind of insane racist march, okay, you had people ripping up, you had Maoris ripping up the flags of the Muslim Brotherhood and Palestine for some reason, ISIS and secular humanism, okay. And then you have this mockery of the working class because some guy wanted Indian food. There's no contradiction between saying, okay, a certain percentage of people is acceptable, but I want my country to be overwhelmingly of my group, and saying, okay, I enjoy foreign dishes here and there.
Right.
These are not completely opposed philosophical principles. And to treat them as such shows how poor your own understanding of philosophical principles is.
You're just trying to say they're working class, therefore they're racist, but they eat Indian food. Well, you're just being a jerk.
Or how much of the bottom of the barrel they're scraping when it comes to arguments.
Yeah.
So the thing is, we know we've got the recipe for onion barges now. We've actually got the recipe, so we can make them for ourselves, actually. Even if we deported every single person
I'll teach you how to make Lebanese food before I go.
We'll still have onion barges.
You're never getting my souvlaki recipe. I want to stay, right?
So there's this speech, Islam doesn't belong in Europe, Islam doesn't belong in the UK, Islam is an enemy. I want to, and this is posted by Dili Hussein, who's the deputy editor of Five Pillars, the mother of all fifth columnist websites. And these guys from the same website say the following.
I mean, I just see them as potential Muslims. You know, that's like, I see a pub as a future mosque. That's what I'm here to do. You know, not to keep this country, not to be a minority in this country, in a non-Muslim majority country. I want this country to become Muslim, obviously through a process of dawah and not through violence or anything like that.
You know how mealy-mouthed this is, given how they defend the terrorists.
Even now on the hijab, I was having a discussion earlier on. We're kind of...
And then you see, again, the same idea from Five Pillars. I do not see Britain as home. It is the abode of infidels. I am supportive of the Taliban. Muslims in Britain should withdraw their children from school, especially the girls. I won't play the whole clip, but please go ahead and watch it. So, what do you expect people to tell you when you say this? Or is it that you think that you're speaking to a Muslim channel and nobody will know that you said it? If you say this and then you object to people saying Islam is an enemy, do you think that you're suffering from some cognitive dissonance? Is that a small possibility?
I think they feel like that their opponents are just so cowed.
Yes, precisely.
That they can do both.
Yes.
They can do both.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter that they don't marry up.
Precisely.
But no, it seems like people are beginning to actually say that they've noticed.
But again, to be fair, there is some sensible coverage from some quarters. Talk TV having a stance against mass immigration and concerns over multiculturalism is not far right or racist. Yeah, obviously. Watch some of the Tommy Robinson rally on live stream, and there is this collection of different people from different groups, obviously not British, obviously participating there happily. And the message is that this is far-right fascism and everybody's going to die if we listen to the people who were there on Saturday.
They're crazy.
Another bit of good news from Stand Up to Racism. I can't resist playing this.
And we've just gotten back from the counter-demo against Tommy Robinson. And I think before we go to the lessons, we really have to look at the reality of what this demo was, and that is a pretty humiliating defeat. If we look at the numbers alone, Tommy Robinson's side seems to have gotten around 1 million, and on our side, lucky if it was 15,000, more likely 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe if we just start there, you know, like, how did we get here?
How did you get here?
Well, you lost all the arguments.
You lost all the arguments. You kept on doubling down in the face of reality. You insisted on denying everything true and good in life. And aside from a small, insane fringe that is getting increasingly violent, everybody else turned their backs on you. That's how you got here, mate. Anyway, shall we look at a couple of the comments?
Right. So Don Browning sends us a cheerleader emoji. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Andrew Fay for $10 says, they say we're... What happened? It's okay. They say we're practicing cancel culture while they practice assassin culture. We're not the same. Also, I want to say that it's not an issue of cancel culture or violating free speech. It's an issue of freedom of assembly. If I know you are hanging out with someone I've heard is a total psychopath, and I tell you, mate, this guy's a total psychopath, and you start parting ways with them, it's not, we're not disrespecting freedom of speech. It's a different issue. There's a crazy rhetoric that leftists have against the right now. Dreadnought Logan says communists are not for the working class. They just want to be the nobles. Just can't admit that to themselves.
Yes.
Skull Kid says England is becoming the same England from V for Vendetta in real time, both the good and bad. However, it's important to remember that the people win.
Yep.
A drunk changeling says Indian people like eating cake, so really they kind of deserved colonialism. why do you hate cake so much? Right? The Hapsification says people forget Tommy wrote a book last year about Britain being demographically replaced, and Tommy has said Britain needs to be over 90% white British.
Yeah.
Yes. Where is it? Let me see.
I'm trying to see the green announcement for video comment number one, Taylor. We have your email and a replacement is on its way to you. Oh, okay. Taylor, a replacement is on its way. Thank you for your video comment.
Thanks. Okay, let's go play videos.
I think it's time to start advocating for legal removal of mainstream media companies. It's one of the main faults of why Jack the Kirk is dead is the lies that they have pushed is just overboard and divisive and no longer a free press of news. It's now just a propaganda arm. So they should be removed.
It was one of the things I said in my article, which very briefly was published on the Mallard, my roadmap, which got me deselected from Reform. It was one of the things in there, which I imagine was one of the things that the leadership at Reform thought was beyond the power. I said exactly that. I said, yeah, end the BBC, end Channel 4 News. I even said the Mail Group. I did a massive list. I was even like the Times. I said the whole Mail Group. That was too much for the likes of Lord Young, Toby Young. Lots of people thought that was far too far. That was far too authoritarian. No, I don't think so. No, it's a matter of, it's becoming a matter of life and death. It's becoming an existential threat. So, yeah, call it authoritarian then if you want, fine. Yeah. But it's something that might need to happen. It's a thing all throughout history in modern times, going back a couple of hundred years, that you've got a free press,
yes,
which is absolutely traitorous and subversive. Yeah, that's something that modern, quote-unquote, free societies have to deal with. It's one of the monkeys on their back.
It's a real problem. The media is a real problem, and how to fix it in a good way is a real challenge. I don't have an answer for you.
Well, just a touch of authoritarianism. No, we'll go in and we'll shut down Channel 4 News. Yeah, you're trying to destroy our society.
Yeah.
So we're not. The government is not going to let you do that anymore. Yeah, call me a sulla, call me a tyrant. Yeah, fine. But I'm saving the nation. It just takes some political balls, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes. Yep.
A Churchill wouldn't think twice. Lincoln wouldn't think twice.
No, they absolutely wouldn't.
No, that's something that's happening now.
Yeah.
Let's play the second video.
Ex-Muslims United.
Thanks, Russian. Let's go to the next one.
So with everything that was going on this week, I figured I'd send a little more wholesome content.
Thanks, Michael.
This is, as I've introduced before, this is Sakura. She's a black female Shiba Inu. More correctly, a Kokosho Mame Shiba. She's basically a toy Shiba. And this is Duke. This is my son's dog. And they're taking a little bit of a break from a very healthy early morning game of ball.
Nice. Game of... Thanks, Mike.
Not quite sure, but
it's a wholesome video.
So it's the death of Aina Zaluska. and the death of Charlie Kirk, it's pretty apparent to me that evil does exist in this world, and there are evil people out there. And my question is this: is there a non-Christian way of confronting this evil? And is there a way of confronting this evil ideology we call wokeism out of people, saving them from corruption?
Can I try to answer that?
Huge, huge.
You want to?
There is... I won't speak in absolutes, because not everybody agrees with me. But my own conversion was based on discovering the extent of evil that exists in this world. And it led me to conclude that original sin is real and that the devil is real. And when you see that, when I saw that, I had no choice other than to choose Christianity and the love of Christ as the only possible antidote. And my view has since solidified, and it's become that unless you build on the rock that is Peter, your ability to think clearly is going to be somewhat limited. That's my personal answer. I don't speak for anybody else. I don't speak for the Lotus Eaters. I speak only for myself. But that's my personal answer to your question. You have to choose the cross.
Yeah, I respect your answer. For myself, I would say that, it's possible to know right and wrong whilst being completely ignorant of the scriptures and the gospel. Throughout history, there have been people that had no concept of those things, like the ancient Greeks, Aristotle, Socrates or something, that were still able to discern right from wrong. But either way, he's right. There is evil in the world.
Yes.
There is evil in the world. And it is sort of your duty to confront it and battle it if you can. If you've got anything in the tank, whatever you've got to do, whatever it takes, whatever works for you.
So there are many questions. That's not just a question of what to do about evil, is what to do in what context. So you could say that there's one question whether you can turn evil people good. I think there is a percentage of people you can't turn good. It's just, I don't know, I don't see how. And there is also the question of what you do in a society. I did a video last week on The Daily about approaches to punishment. I think you need to be very strict in enforcing the law in a realistic fashion and communicate across the board that there will be consequences, rather than play the ultra sentimental leftist card where you constantly try to give excuses for the most heinous of crimes. But this is just actually a really good question, and we should definitely have a huge discussion about it. We can't do it now. And
me and Ferris have talked about having a conversation about exactly that, really. I think that would be good. I'm up for it. I'd really enjoy it. Enjoy doing that.
Let's go to the next one.
As a classical liberal, it hurts me to say this, but Charlie Kirk's murder has convinced me that we need to stop being so absolute about rights. It's clearly not feasible to have this political freedom, and we have to consider the safety of innocent people. So far, every political assassination in the USA and the most recent murder and attempted murders of political figures has one factor in common, and it's for this reason that we need common sense restrictions on leftists. I'm not saying ban them, no one is coming for your leftists, but it's clear that they pose a heightened risk to life and limb, and there's no reason for them to be in schools, on university campuses, or at public events, and no one needs to own a high-capacity leftist gathering.
Very good video comment.
Let's go to the next one.
Very good. It's like in the 19th century, they're often called anarchists.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Perfect idea, gentlemen. This is how we invade Britain. Tell the general to order 1,000 rubber dinghy boats on Amazon next day delivery. This is how we invade the British and win the war.
Sir, the Germans are coming! Hold your fire, men. Those are doctors and engineers. Why aren't they shooting at us?
The bloody fools must think we are doctors and engineers. The plan worked.
Was that all AI generated? Was that a skit off TV or something? That was good.
Let's go to our comments now and read some. Because also there's the show by Faraz at 3 p.m. Do join. Yes. Right. So, Blandin Broomfield says, interviewed with his high school classmates, show that he had begun to be radicalized in the 10th grade.
Okay.
Well, interesting. I'll check it out.
I've not heard that before, but okay.
Anonymy says, Utah is not the right-wing utopia people think it is. It's suffering from radical leftism in certain places, like everywhere else, such as Salt Lake City. Because Utah is so conservative in certain locations, certain locations become radically opposite. I disagree that he was radicalized in university. He was already radicalized in high school and pushed further by being terminally online. Discord is very important here, as a number of servers will have groomers. I mean, we did mention social media when we spoke about radicalization, and also it's highly unlikely that university played zero part when he's 22 years old. Chance from Canada says, obviously more than one person knew about this. There were multiple patsies in the crowd. Old man to identify one. Neighbors report suspicious out-of-state license plates convening at the household. Leftists on X posting something big happening to Charlie tomorrow, the day before.
Yeah.
Sophie Liv says, it's wild to think about. All this Trump and his followers are Nazis rhetoric has now gone on for over 9 years.
Yes.
This young man is 22, so it has been his life since he was 13. For all of his formative years, it's all he has known. And so many others we currently see on TikTok in his age group. The radicalization among young people is dangerous and very tragic. Right, so the right Omar Awad says, the right organizes slowly, but when it acts, will be laser-focused and effective. The worry isn't that Trump will act heavy-handed, but that the right will act without his moderating influence. I believe Larry Correa coined the expression, the left has a dial, the right has a switch. The finding out part of the equation will be swift, brutal, and merciless. Someone online says they choose not to take responsibility because they have to be the victims. That's what their whole thing is based on. Therefore, anything they do is not their fault. That's also one of the reasons why I just can't see how to treat them as equals. Because when I want to see equal people treat someone as equal, I need to treat them as responsible human beings rather than someone who is constantly making excuses for themselves and blaming other people. I just can't.
They remind me of children screaming, but Dad, this is unfair.
Yeah. Michael Dribbleby says, the difference between Charlie and the left. Charlie was prepared to have a dialogue and discuss actual ideas. Bad news for the left, he was the moderate voice. Now that he's gone, they have galvanized the right. And should we go? Do you want me to read comments from yours?
I could read them, whatever you want.
Okay.
Let me see. From Kevin Fox. Bo, how can you say AOC is not well-read? She has memorized all four cocktail menus and all the specials for the week. I don't want to make fun of the working class for working, as a general rule. It's funny, she is a dumbass, but let's not make fun of her for that part.
She suffers from malapropisms when you get a word wrong.
Yes.
You say the wrong word.
Yes, yes.
How convenient.
Fenn Scotty of Swindon. The thing I hate about the left is how they act outraged for you doing anything in response to their aggression. Yes. You fight or you die is not an extreme statement when we have, within the last couple of weeks, a normal man was murdered in public for his moderate opinions. And these demons celebrated it and claimed that more people should do the same to more people who are themselves moderate.
And that's not just what we have the last weeks. We had Irina Zarutska. We had the Christian Assyrian who was murdered while he was live streaming in Paris.
Yes.
We had a couple that was murdered after being tortured 5 hours by someone who was released for six times. There, it's not just that.
Yep.
It's a hellish week.
Monkey Smoke says, I carried my cardboard sign with foot-sized letters spelling Charlie Kirk on Saturday. Charlie Kirk made me a better person, and his effect on my son is joyous for me. I love Charlie Kirk always. I will carry my sign at every rally in London from now on. May God bless everyone. May God bless you. Yes, he did make people better because of his commitment to God. Arizona Desert Rat says, the number of unarmed black men getting shot per year is more like 5 to 8. in the US, if a knife or car is being used in an attempt to hurt someone, it's considered a weapon. No, when the Washington Post did their data from where I got the 10 to 20, they included cars as being unarmed, and they included a weapon next to you as not being in your arm, you know? I think that's it from today. We're a little bit over time.
Yeah.
No, we will see you again in 25 minutes.
So we have reached the end of our podcast. Thank you very much. Do join in for 3 p.m. to watch Firas's Realpolitik, where he will be talking about the how civil wars can be averted.
Hopefully.
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 See you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Goodbye.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.